See, I think if you want to make the NBA lottery really interesting, you go full Shirley Jackson with it. The NBA owners who fuck it up, you throw stones at them until they are dead. What? Why are you looking at me like that?
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special episode of Inside the Locker here on oneofus.net. This is, of course, the weekly nerdy sportscast that you can't help but listen to whether you like sports or not. Yes, we were the geeks pushed into the lockers in high school, but while we were in there, we studied up on sports, and when we came out, we were this hybrid monster thing that terrorized the jocks. It terrorized them! And now, well, this is what we do, so we're probably right back to status quo, I mean, coolness-wise. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and we got the whole gang with us tonight. We got Mr. Elliot Fontanette.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We got JC DeLeon.
What's up?
And we got Adam B. Charles.
Hi.
Brian apparently, you know, doubles as a soccer announcer.
I do, right? I think I have a promising career as a whatever the Spanish word for soccer commentator is.
As long as they change the goal to be
Gordita? Is it Gordita? I think it's Gordita. We actually have two very special guests with us tonight, and we're going to explain a little bit. This is very special for a couple reasons. We've got guests. We are in a new space. Lots to talk about, but I'm going to introduce our guest first. You've heard him on the show before. He was instrumental in our Game of Cups coverage of the Men's World Cup just a year ago, actually. Almost a year ago exactly, last June. Mr. Ramon Ramirez.
What's happening, everybody? Let me get that aux cable, man. I got some jams you got to hear.
And also joining us, we are actually recording in the Austin offices of Daily.media, and we have office manager / sports nerd himself, Mr. Logan, is with us.
Howdy!
Logan, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing wonderful. It's a pleasure to have you all here.
I want to thank you very much for two things. One, letting us record in this beautiful Daily.office.
Gorgeous.
And two, making sure that no one is going to go thirsty during this recording. I really do appreciate that. This is how you know you're in an Austin company. You're sitting around a conference table. There is super upscale technology so you can do all of your networking, all of your video conferencing, and a metric shit ton of booze. I like that. That's
this
how you know.
This is how we know it.
Exactly.
This is how we know it.
This is also why everyone moves to Austin.
This is why everyone moves to Austin. And this is why more companies should move to Austin and emulate Daily.media, because they're super awesome.
Actually, no. Please stay the fuck away from Austin.
Don't come to Austin.
Damn straight.
We're erecting a Thunderdome around the city, and you can only get in if you win in a battle royale. So
you're saying just walk away.
Just walk away. You can prevent overpopulation. Just walk away.
All I know is, like, when I went to law school, I was promised alcohol in the office. Never happened.
Wait, when you say law school, do you mean watching Mad Men?
I mean both.
Okay, good. Because when I watched Mad Men, and then I went to work again, and I was like, where the hell is the wet bar cart? There's no wet bar cart.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you think your office was going to have one of those with, like, the crystal?
It doesn't come packaged. Yeah. No, the point is you're supposed to have the balls to just bring it. You bring it and they just don't say shit about it.
I did find a bottle of wine in my desk when I was cleaning it out because it was somebody else's desk. I was like, oh, it's a bottle of wine.
He just found the bottle that he put there the day before.
Really, you just have to have the balls to just leave a half-empty bottle of Jack on your desk.
See, that's the ballsy move. I agree. If you show up with a half a bottle, then immediately they're going to assume that you drank the other half while you were at work. Like, if you bring a full bottle that's not open, they're going to be like, oh, he was planning to, but he never actually did it. So you show up with a half a bottle, whether you're intending on drinking at work or not. It's like when you're in a Japanese prison camp. I'm going somewhere with this. And the new batch of prisoners shows up, and you immediately kill one of the old prisoners just to kind of set the ground rules, to really set the tone of who's in charge. When you show up on your first day of work, you show up with a half-empty bottle of whiskey, and you put that shit in your desk, and you just leave it there.
Was the Japanese part even really relevant to that analogy?
No. Like,
could it have been any prison?
No, I'm just hungry, and I really want some fucking sashimi.
I was like, did Unbroken just, like, flash into your mind?
It rarely does, Elliot. It rarely does, because...
I don't think it did for Angelina.
You know, if Immortan Joe had a one-word review of that movie, I think you can imagine what it would be.
Yeah. Mediocre.
Mediocre! Yes, sorry, Angelina Jolie, you are a mediocre filmmaker.
She really is.
But, believe it or not, this is a sportscast, and we are going to jump in the way we usually do by talking about the headlines.
Flash, the Captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. The
These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
All right, and on this show, we got to start with... You know what? I titled last week's episode, "It's Not Over Until 5 Minutes After We Record." Because that's exactly what happens every time. And sure enough, the last time we recorded was the day of Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. And the Golden State Warriors are victorious in 6. I would take credit. I would start bragging and say it's as I predicted. But I think I changed that prediction like 4 times over the course of our broadcasting. But I think JC called it pretty early on.
Yeah, I originally called it in 6. I amended that when Kyrie went down to 5. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, my original prediction was 6. So, yeah, I thought with Kyrie and LeBron... I thought they'd pull a couple of games out, and, I mean, they did. And, yeah. I mean, I'm happy they got as close as they did without Kyrie. I'm definitely bummed because LeBron's my favorite player. But, I mean, I love Steph Curry, too, and yeah. I tend not to be as emotional about these. Like, I love basketball itself, and so, I mean, within a few hours, ugh. Yeah.
Basketball!
Within a few hours after the game, I was okay. I'm happy for Steph, happy for Sean Livingston, Iggy.
When you said, "I love Steph Curry, too," I didn't think you meant also. I thought you meant, like, the sequel. And I was like, Klay Thompson? But, you know what? We've talked at length about the finals. So, Ramon, Logan, I would like to hear what you guys have to say about what ended up transpiring, the outcome of this NBA finals.
Yeah, well, actually, so, JC, I had the exact opposite reaction as yourself. I thought it would be a 5-game series, a 4-game series. Cleveland was overmatched in every capacity. It was basically 10 dudes against 3 dudes. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the game, I really thought after game 5, after LeBron's kind of come to Jesus moment, I'm the best player on earth, I don't put a ceiling on what I can do. And I was just hoping, I was like, God, he can come out there, he can drop 55, he can drop 60. I wanted to see something special, and we didn't see something special. And, you know, I hate to say Michael Jordan and bring him up again, but the reality is that Michael Jordan never put his name on the bulletin board and then didn't deliver. And that's something that LeBron didn't do. And I think it was a really painful finale because a lot of us just kept waiting for this Hulk to kind of explode. And what we instead saw was a lot of deferential dishing to guys like James Jones in the corner that were just clanking everything. Then a lot of missed three-pointers. And what we saw is LeBron ran out of gas. You can't blame him for doing that, but you certainly wanted to see something special. I thought we were going to get to 7. And I think this does put him out of contention for greatest player of all time consideration.
Well, I was also going
to
say...
Like that early? He's only 30 years old, though.
Yeah, to me, this puts him in more contention because, like, Jordan never went to the finals without an all-star with him.
Yeah. How long can you really carry... I'm being critical of the Cavaliers here, but how long can you really carry an entire team for... like that long.
And Ramon was right. Like, they basically had 3 players, including LeBron.
Yeah.
They had Dellavedova, who... bit of a dirty player, and then Mozgov. Because Tristan Thompson, he just grabs rebounds. He doesn't actually shoot.
Is it just me, or Dellavedova and Mozgov sound like 2 things that should be on that wet liquor, that wet bar liquor cart that we said before? Can I have a Dellavedova and soda, please?
Or put that on the shopping list.
Yes, yes, please, please do.
That sounds like a White Russian made with, like, chocolate milk or something.
Oh, my God! Ellie, but again, will you make me one of those?
You know, getting back to the Jordan and LeBron thing, the real issue was that LeBron doesn't have that inevitability that Jordan had when he hit that corner. After Jordan won that first title, there was this feeling like, well, and then the other thing that I think people are forgetting is the collection of scalps that Jordan came away with in the 90s. Charles Barkley, the Sean Kemp, Gary Payton's sons, the Stockton and Malone guys, you know, Patrick Ewing, the Shaq Orlando Magic dynasty. He beat everybody. He beat Magic. He beat Barkley. So it was just LeBron... At this point, to have that GOAT consideration, certainly he's the most talented player we've ever seen. We've never seen a player built like Karl Malone that can move like a Porsche. But we needed a little bit more from him in the series, which sounds ridiculous given his statistics, but we just didn't see him finish.
Yeah, and, no, I would agree with that. I mean, as much as I love LeBron's game, and he compiled a bunch of stats. It is kind of one of those where it's just like it drives me crazy a lot of times. Being, you know, him being my favorite player, I'm just like just drive to the basket, just
because he nobody can stop him.
Yeah,
but he just isn't wired like that. Is the thing. And like one of the things, I was never a LeBron fan, but this series made me a LeBron fan. Like I always thought he was a little overrated. It's like, oh, you're calling yourself the king when you get in the league, whatever. But this one, like, it felt like he sort of left behind the being the greatest of all time, and that comparison. He said, I'm just going to be my own player. I'm going to do what I can. And I respect him more now. Like, I feel like he's coming to his own.
I think you have to. I mean, whenever you do what he's done in his career, just in general, like, beyond Cleveland, or, like, including, I guess, in Cleveland, like, before and all that, you know, like, what he's been able to do almost single-handedly has been really impressive. I think that you can't just completely ignore him from the conversation of best player.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so let's say that he went in there and let's say he did put up an average of like 50 points a game, and you know, would you expect that if he was going in and getting those kinds of numbers, that he would actually come out with a win?
Yeah, absolutely. I think LeBron, what he said, the game plan for Game 5 was, I have to be the best I've ever played, and I don't put a ceiling on what I can do. And yeah, I mean, you know, LeBron gets to 50, which is something that Jordan did, you know, pretty consistently in the postseason. I think that makes a difference. But yeah, Game 5, Game 6, Game 7, just the frustrating thing there was that every game was pretty close until the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. and then the Cavs completely ran out of gas. And so Games 5, 6, and 7 were just kind of dud blowouts. Nice. And as soon as you know, Cleveland could tie, you know, Curry or, you know, I mean, that's the thing that people don't really understand about Golden State is how good they are. You know, Klay Thompson, probably the second best player, certainly the second most decorated player on that team, scores 5 points and fouls out of Game 6. It doesn't matter. And it was a heartbreaking result, I think, for anybody that wanted to see something magical.
Yeah, well, see, I think I know how you feel.
It was like Jurassic World, which is tying it back in.
Well, it's like, I think what you're talking about, it's like watching the Avengers and wanting the Hulk, like wanting Banner to turn into the Hulk.
Yeah,
and he only sort of turns into the Hulk, and you're like, but you can do so much more.
Yeah, yeah. And I've
you're holding
of,
back.
If I may borrow from something completely on par with the Avengers, which is the classic Greek play Cassandra, I feel like I predicted that this was going to happen with LeBron because he really was carrying the team on his back, and you know, how long can you really sustain that energy? So LeBron has fallen, not by my wishes or my hand, but as I foresaw, as Cassandra would say. Yes, because, children, you can be a sports fan and a lover of classic Greek literature. You are the worst, if you are both, as I have clearly demonstrated. But, that being said, congratulations to the Warriors. I think it was just, plain and simple, it was just their year. They came out of the Western Conference, which I can't remember who it was that sent it to me. It was actually, our friend Gene sent me this great image. It was, the top image was, it said Eastern Conference, and it was LeBron's head on Mario, and it was just like one mushroom to jump over. And then they showed the Western Conference, and they had piled all the enemies from the first Super Mario Brothers into one level, and it was Steph Curry's head on Mario, like, oh shit. They really did. It was a trial by fire. They ran through the best teams in the NBA, and there was no way they were going to be stopped, LeBron or not. And his monstrous performance notwithstanding, it was just plain the Warriors.
Yeah, not just seeing all the vines that Steph Curry and the Warriors like put up, like just from a visual standpoint of how good they were, looking at the numbers. That left corner, Steph Curry by himself shoots something like 75% from that corner when you factor in one of the new analytic statistics called effective field goal percentage, which combines the value of a three-point shot versus the likelihood of a two-point shot going in, and it creates a percentage. He shot 100%. He basically, when you factor in the more valuable three-point shot over a mid-range two from that left corner, which is the corner where Steph hit that shot against New Orleans when they came back from 20, he doesn't miss from that corner.
Well, like, here's the thing I want to ask you then. Do you think if Kyrie Irving and...
Wait, is this a hypothetical?
Yes. Yeah,
Adam, strap in. Go ahead.
If Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, he disappeared all year, so I forgot his name. If they were healthy, you think it would have been at least a 7-game series? Do you think Cleveland would have taken it?
I think it would have gone 7. It would have depended on how much of an anomaly the defense that Kyrie played on Steph Curry in Game 1 was, because he's not known for his defense. If Kevin Love would have played more, their offensive rebounding wouldn't have been as strong, but you could also argue that the three-point shooting wouldn't have been as bad.
You have an off valve from LeBron.
There's been a trend in the last couple of years where teams that are high-paced don't care very much about offensive rebounds, and so you can make the argument that while Tristan played great, if they were playing a more up-tempo offense, the fact that he offensive rebounds a lot wouldn't have really mattered.
Mm. It's interesting. Well, that being said, staying on the NBA for a second, is the lottery done? They determined the draft order, yes?
Yeah. Okay. The draft is tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. When this posts, it'll be today, yesterday. Yeah. Who knows? The point is
Thursday.
The draft.
Thursday.
It's a Thursday. It is this whenever June you're hearing 25th. This that Thursday. So I will admit that as much as I follow the NBA the NFL draft and trying to keep track of players in college, NBA, not so much. So I'm going to need a little help. Who are the players, one, that we should be watching, and what are the major storylines as far as the drama with teams and who they're going to take?
Yeah, absolutely. No, JC, come on. All right, look, it's like watching Night at the Roxbury. We'll keep it real. JC and I are both looking off respective screens to make sure that we have these names right. So we're certainly not.
I'm looking at them. I know a lot of the names.
But I do think what's really important is that the reason it's called the lottery, not the draft, is that they're very thin. They go about four or five super game changing players deep, and then from there it's just kind of interesting guys that may or may not make the roster.
Yeah,
and I think what's the biggest storyline going into this is what the Los Angeles Lakers are going to do, because they're probably going to go home with Jahlil Okafor, who is a big, tall, national championship winning center out of Duke. He's a 7-footer, and he's going to be a Laker, I think, because he can help the Lakers this year. But he's not necessarily the best player in the draft or the best long-term prospect. Now, the number one guy is going to be a guy named Carl Anthony Towns. Mm-hmm. He is one of the, I think, 50 to 55 Kentucky players that are going pro.
Yeah.
He's a done deal. He's going to make Minnesota a pretty exciting young team it has an offense to build around with Wiggins, with Rubio. And the Timberwolves are going to be exciting and frisky for a couple years to come, especially in the weaker
Suns got to be exciting.
All right. So there's what are the Lakers are going to do for me, because the number one pick is a done deal.
Yeah.
It's going to be Anthony Towns or Carl Anthony Towns. Jahlil Okafor is probably going to go to the Lakers. JC, what do you think?
Yeah, I think one and two are locked. Carl Anthony Towns and Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah, and from there, and this is where I think it gets frustrating. Now, I think folks should know that. For no particularly good reason, I'm a fan of the New York Knicks. I've always been going on 20.
Oh, you're the 20, one.
Yeah, 24 years.
That's the best reason I've ever heard for being a New York Knicks fan.
Yeah, I just like the. Yeah, you're a child and you play NBA Jam and you're like, yeah, I like the blue team. You know,
that's a good. Yeah,
and
it makes more sense than Spike Lee.
And I just stuck with it.
And then he just stuck to this day.
NBA Jam, that was Patrick Ewing and John Stark.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah,
I would
argue
that the Knicks are the official team at the Daily Dot.
But I am a legitimate. Knicks fan, have been since the early 90s, so over 20 years. But anyway, the point is, I think the big story, and I think what you're going to enjoy during social media is like how disappointed and distressed all the Knicks fans are going to be, because the person that everybody wants, D'Angelo Russell, the point guard from Ohio State, I think probably kind of a James Harden type of player. He can run the triangle offense, which is what Phil Jackson wants to bring to the Knicks. He's an exciting player, and I think every Knicks fan kind of hopes that he's going to be there, but kind of knows that he absolutely will not be. D'Angelo Russell will probably go to Philadelphia at the 3 slot, which means that when the Knicks picks fourth, they're going to basically have to settle for one of the foreign prospects, and they have a really dark history when it comes to drafting foreign players. There's a guy named Frederick Weiss from France that they took over on Artest back in 1999. Didn't even play for the Knicks. So it's just kind of we're all kind of bracing for having to take a guy like Emmanuel Mudiay, who's Chinese.
You sound like a Saints fan.
It's just going to be an ugly situation. But yeah, the Knicks are just kind of notorious for blowing the draft, and I think that's what you can expect tomorrow night. They were trying to get Steph Curry actually back in 2009. Warriors picked one spot ahead of them, and so yeah. That's basically the
NBA. Pretty much
the Browns of the NBA. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think the Raiders are more articulate because the Raiders are the Browns are tragic. The Raiders are just incompetent, and the Knicks are kind of on that level.
Yeah, to echo his point, 3 and 4 are going to be interesting because I think there have been rumors about the Knicks trying to trade out of that 4 spot and possibly sending it to Phoenix for Eric Bledsoe, and I think that could happen if Philadelphia screws up and takes. One of the foreign guys that Ramon was alluding to, the most highly touted foreign guy is a guy from Latvia named Kristaps Porzingis. 7'1", has a huge wingspan.
Yeah, that'll be a top selling jersey.
Yeah.
Doesn't he make games?
Zingas, yeah.
as long as you didn't make a Buzzinga joke, I think we're gonna be okay.
7'2", people have compared him to Dirk Nowitzki because he's tall, but he's not a banger. He's not going to play. Not going to play down low.
And so he's got a funny name.
He's tall and white. It's a tall white boy who can play. That's what it is.
Breaking through the subtle racism of the NBA.
We need those. Come on.
He's a gym rat.
People do describe him as a gym rat.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
He's tall. He's tall and a shooter. But the problem is. he's not going to pay off for at least 2 years.
Right. European big men are always a gamble, and since Dirk Nowitzki, there's really only been two European big men that have panned out, and they were both named Gasol.
Yeah.
And so,
got it. Okay.
Wait, one of them wasn't Andre the Giant. I'm so confused.
That's a weird Nintendo game.
So confused.
Although, would you consider him a cunning Zingas, though?
I love it. This is what happens when we drink and record. But yeah, no, I am very interested. I realize I'm a little remiss in my duties. All the time. I meant specifically tonight. If you don't follow the NBA, you might not know what the fuck we're talking about with this lottery situation. It is different. The way the NBA does its draft is different from the way the NFL does its draft. You've listened to our commentary of the NFL draft. You probably know how that works. But can you guys explain a little bit about how this whole lottery thing works?
Yeah, it's pretty much the NFL is pretty much a set thing. Like, the team with the worst record has the number one pick regardless, unless they trade out of it. The NBA does it a little bit differently, where it's a lottery system, and the 14 teams that don't make the playoffs, ranking in order from worst to best of the 14 that didn't make the playoffs, have the better to lowest chance at winning that number one pick. And so if you had the worst record, you're not necessarily going to end up with the number one pick. It all depends on how it works out with the lottery.
I'm sorry. Breaking bit of news here from SB Nation. A Uruguay player got a red card. What league is this? What's going on?
Yeah, I can explain that. It is the Copa America, which happens every 4 years.
It's a dirty league.
I love that. Ramon Ramirez. Again, you're like the
weatherman. I don't know what's funny about that.
No, it's because you're like the weatherman on every local news channel.
In Ramon's defense, on SportsCenter, even the white guys say it just like that.
Okay. Copa America, yeah. So
they never have an accent until they say their own name. It's like, reporting live, this is Rafael Sanchez.
Yeah, so Copa America, happens every 4 years. All the South American countries play each other. It is older than the World Cup. It's been happening for 99 years, since 1916. It's one of my favorite tournaments because it's just, when you think about South America historically, they're like 100 years behind us. Chile kind of didn't sort itself out until the 1970s, And so, there's a lot of revolution. Like, I feel like every Latin American man is just this kind of, like, angry, indignant, like, hey, it's okay, but hey, there's, like, a lot of that culture. So you take all of those countries and put them on the field together. They already don't like each other. And you have a big, intense, wonderful tournament that happens every 4 years. Uruguay won it back in 2011. The 2011 tournament happened in Argentina. Uruguay very famously eliminated Argentina in controversial fashion. And tonight, Wednesday night, Chile is hosting tonight's tournament. Chile downs the defending champion Uruguay 1-0 after two red cards because things got a little bit ugly on the field. So the game finished 11-9, and there you have it. But Brian, what happened on SB Nation?
Apparently,
yes, let's define ugly.
There was some heavy penetration.
Yeah, there. I can't really put my finger on what happened, but I can put it in what happened, because apparently what happened is you have a Uruguay player who got a red card after, a Chilean player sticks his finger up the opposing player's ass.
Right. Now, again, the weird thing about this was the thing?
It's South America. It's different rules. It's South America.
The guy that got fingered was a guy named Edison Cavani, who is probably, Luis Suarez, the guy that beat everybody at the World Cup last year, plays for Barcelona, just won the European title with Barcelona. He's suspended because of last year's actions. So you have Edison Cavani, kind of leading the Uruguayan attack, gets suspended, gets red carded, gets thrown out of the game, and on top of all that, gets a finger in his asshole.
Wait. Was Tom Green there?
No.
So the guy who got a finger in his asshole got the red card?
That's exactly correct.
Did he shit on ourselves?
Yeah. And it's just one of those things where the Chilean guy did it under the, like, kind of on the low. No one saw it.
Well, yeah.
No one, the other guy.
It's because, as Arlie Ermey said, he did not even have the common courtesy to give him a reach around. And that is
now,
why.
We're going
to
do it. Now, first and foremost, guys, let's be very careful about our jokes here, because we are making jokes about fingers in the ass. We are not making gay jokes. Okay?
No,
homophobic jokes.
If it was a romantic gesture, more power to him.
Absolutely.
My problem with this situation is the lack of romance.
Now, this is a.
I got a red card every time I got a finger in the ass, I would never play soccer again.
I could go anywhere Friday nights. Come on.
Now, this is an Inside the Locker exclusive. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show the picture to Elliot for the first time, and then he's going to react to it. So here's the photograph. Very clearly a
the
finger.
The technique is solid. I don't want to,
Brian's right. The technique is solid because he has like his other finger is bent back.
Yeah, so it's sort of a lift and separate situation.
Yeah, it's like he's back into the lift.
He's doing the inverted hookup, basically.
He's doing the hook.
So he basically bowling balled him.
Yeah. He bowling balled him. Absolutely. Yeah, like absolutely.
This is the kind of shit we talk about on this show.
Literally.
It makes me happy. It just plain. Hey, speaking of soccer, should we talk about the Women's World Cup? Because contrary to... You know what?
Well, are we done talking about the lottery system?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got distracted by fingers and asses, which tends to happen.
I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to continue talking about that.
Did I miss anything about the NBA lottery before we move on to Women's World Cup?
Nah.
It sounded like Logan had a lingering
accent. I didn't have anything, to be honest.
You're just trying to keep us on track, and I appreciate
that. I know almost nothing about the NBA.
If I can sum up the NBA lottery, it seems like the first 5 picks are interesting, and then the next 20 picks are for people who really know the NBA, are really fans of those teams.
Yeah, so it's like every other draft.
Yeah.
I like to think of the last 50 picks as what I call the Eastern European Parade.
Yeah. It's kind of like the NBA draft is like when you're a child that grows up in a Latino home and it's time to hit the pinata. The first couple of kids get to hit the pinata, but then after that, all the older, bigger kids don't ever get to hit the pinata because the pinata has been destroyed.
So it's really just scavenging. So that's actually a very apt metaphor.
Because speaking of the older, bigger kids, Frank Kaminsky is falling like a stone in the ocean. He's currently projected at like 14.
Isn't that a band?
Stone in the ocean. I don't know. It sounds very emo.
Frank Kaminsky, the big man from Wisconsin.
Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank. Someone's going to get a heck of a bench warmer, though.
Well, I tell you, you got James Harden, who was on the bench in Oklahoma. I think it was Oklahoma.
Which, funnily enough, the 14th pick is Oklahoma.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, okay, so now that we've covered, let's see, I'm trying to keep track here with the NBA Finals.
I think Women's World Cup, is that what
we... Fingers in the ass. Women's World Cup, yes. That's, I remember...
The next logical progression.
I know, right? I remember when, Ramon, when we covered the World Cup last year, there was a swell of patriotism, as the men's team, behind the... Excellent goalkeeping of Tim Howard. there was so much excitement, and I remember being at the game where in the last few seconds we watched as arguably the best player in the entire World Cup sunk the goal that sunk the U.S. And I'm hoping that this patriotism I'm feeling yet again for the women's world team as they continue to climb the ranks and do well is not going to be similarly dashed upon the rocks of disappointment. How do you see the women's world cup team going from here?
Sure. Well, the U.S. women's national team has already gotten farther than the men did last summer.
That's
right.
What I thought.
Round of 8, right?
Yeah, got to the quarters, got to the Elite 8. They have a rematch of the 1999 World Cup final, the iconic one where the penalty kick was scored. Brandy took off her shirt, waved it.
I love that moment.
A great moment.
The Petey Pablo moment.
Very, very great moment. The Petey Pablo moment.
Petey Pablo moment, yes.
Playing Shine on Friday, that is a projected win. I think the problem is, again, just think of the way the world works. Countries that have wealth, that have progressive kind of institutional things going, are going to be ahead of the curve. So that means that countries like Colombia and Mexico, out of the World Cup. But Europe is really leading the pack. And I'd say right now the two best teams in the tournament thus far have been Germany, have been France. The French have a player named Louisa Nassib, who is, they call her the female Zidane. Zidane was this famous French player.
But Zinedine Zidane.
Zinedine Zidane, yeah.
One of the few soccer players I know because of the headbutt incident.
It's just yeah, yeah. The hat, sir.
Great,
thank you.
Yeah, great, and great, great name to say. But anyway, so Louisa Nassib and the French, best looking team thus far, but they're running into the Germans that, again, have destroyed teams. They beat the Ivory Coast 10-0. So Germany, France, I think that winner will play the United States in the semifinal, and that winner will be favored against the United States.
Wow.
Because the United States have kind of relied on it's like anything. You think of the NFL when you have a player that when you have a team that's kind of relying on, say, you know, a ground game that features a running back and the running back runs out of gas. That's kind of what we're looking at. USA runs on Megan Rapinoe, who kind of like leads everything down the wings and then finishes with Alex Morgan and Abby Wambach. Abby Wambach is this is her last tournament. She's going to retire after the tournament. She didn't play any club stuff, so she's been rusty. Alex Morgan had a bone bruise, so she's been hurt. And Rapinoe got carded in the round of 16, so she will be unavailable against China. So again, the United States just kind of limping along. I think their last game will probably be against Germany or France, and then that country will go on to win.
So I'm curious about this from your perspective, because so Brian, you brought up the swell of patriotism last year, and it seems like to me, because all my life I've watched an unhealthy amount of ESPN and listened to an unhealthy amount of ESPN radio.
You say
and
unhealthy, I say American.
Yeah, and it seems like since last year's World Cup, more so than any other, that the popularity and the liking of soccer kind of stuck around. And what do you follow soccer year round? But like, have you noticed more coverage of it, or does it seem like it's picking up in popularity?
Yeah, I think it's just it's a weird sport to follow, because following soccer means following kind of like random leagues and random, you know, transfer windows, and it's kind of a year-round thing. You know, most leagues run during the school year, right, September to May, and then all the international tournaments happen in the summertime. But once you kind of plug into that, then it's just really easy to kind of build into your sports life. I love, for example, the Spanish league and the Premier League, and you can watch that at like 8, 9 in the morning. Yeah, have a beer at the bar, and then it's time for college football.
That is the other thing I kind of noticed.
Wow.
Yeah, that is the other thing I kind of noticed. Like, it's almost like a year-round thing. It's like NASCAR. Like, yes, there's almost no off-season.
Yeah, it's always kind of on, and you know, it's an easy thing to have in the background. So for anyone out there that likes soccer and that is like, hey, you know, I kind of like soccer. I like drinking at 9 in the morning.
Why did you look at me when you said that? I would like to know the answer to that question.
I certainly do. What I would advise you to do is to just like arbitrarily pick one of the English Premier League teams, and that's because that league has the most money and has the most diverse players. You know, the German league is amazing, but most of the players are German. The best players in the world play in the English leagues, and it's the most competitive league because, you know, like the German league, the Spanish league, the Italian league are very top heavy. There's like 2 to 3 contenders, 17 shitty teams, so a lot of unwatchable games. Just randomly pick a Premier League team. And then Austin,
Tottenham.
And then just yeah. Logan and I pick Tottenham.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
is Manchester United a part of that league?
Yeah, it is.
Because
I'm
a big fan of Eurotrip.
Yeah. just pick Manchester United. And my, like, if you know, if I can nudge everybody in one direction, the official team of Ramon Ramirez and Logan and the Daily Dot is Tottenham Hotspur. They're kind of like the Jets. They're like,
oh,
you know, they're like, they're in
and
London.
You picked them willingly.
Yeah, they're like in London, so it's a big market. But they're not one of the teams that are like super wealthy and or can just buy every player. A lot of homegrown talent. Probably like they got a guy named Harry Kane who's 21. He's like the next great British soccer player. It's only a matter of time before someone throws money at him and takes him. But like, yeah. So the point is, the other reason for that is that the Tottenham, like the people that hang out and get drunk and watch the Tottenham games, do so at Mr. Tramps off of 183.
Yes, the great bar that has hosted one of us events in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
Free pizza too.
Free pizza. I can't guarantee that they'll always have free pizza, but great place to watch the games on Saturday. And then the league kicks off. And actually, you mentioned Man U. First game of the season, the big kickoff special for the Premier League is going to be Tottenham Man U.
Yes,
like August 8th. So. We're gonna get hammered from that one.
Are they the league that does that thing that I read about? Like, if a team is crappy enough, long enough, like, they get kicked out?
You're out of the league, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we would
have no Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right, that's what
we
I'm saying.
We would have no Oakland Raiders.
That's what I'm saying. It's an interesting thing that league does. Like, yeah, we'd have no Raiders, no Jaguars, no Sacramento Kings. Like,
no Sacramento Kings!
Well, do they kick them out and, like, replace them with another team? Like,
yeah, this is like the lower teams move down the upper teams from the lower tier move up.
So you'd be like it's NBA D-League teams stepping
if
up.
If the Arizona Diamondbacks got kicked out of Major League Baseball and the Round Rock Express got promoted into Major League Baseball.
Major League back to the minors. That's like the worst Major League movie, but I like the concept.
Conceptually fantastic. Yeah, exactly.
I think the scriptwriters did too.
But it also makes you great moves, because then like you have the who wins the tournament, but then at the end of the season you're like, oh man, who's going to get kicked out of the league? who's going to, and like those games are super compelling. And then for like very small teams that have like, that can like spend wisely and develop good players, they can kind of get to the table, and the dream is to get to the Premier League. And even though you won't last long because you don't have the resources that like Man U does, it, you can still get to the big leagues. And so that's
super really compelling. Cool.
A lot of fun. I think probably enough soccer though. I think people.
Logan, Ramon, I want you to know this. This is already in a half an hour the most informative show we have ever ever recorded.
How's this for informative? I picked Tottenham because I like their logo.
See, yeah, I feel like that's how most, I, you know what, not to sell out my own countrymen, but I feel like that's how most people in the States pick an English Premier League team.
Totally.
That's how Phil Jackson chose to go to the Knicks was, well, I coached a red team, coached a gold team.
It's a rooster standing on top of a soccer ball. That's what it is.
It's a great logo. Also, like,
that's great, kid. Don't get cocky.
Yeah.
That's how Rick Barnes went from Texas to Tennessee. He's like, same color, same logo.
Same logo.
All set.
Don't have to change.
Keep the
my
ties.
Yes, exactly. Awesome. Well, that's going to do it for our headline segment. And now we're going to do something we haven't done in a long time. Back by popular demand, it's cheers from the cheap seats. And I was going to pause there until I realized we don't actually have a jingle for that. So instead, I'm just going to answer your questions submitted via Twitter and also on Facebook. And there was one question on Facebook from longtime fan Jordan Worth Cobb that I absolutely cannot ignore. I love this question. Which player or coach from any sport today could you see captaining a Starfleet ship?
Oh, God. I know.
Think this is a fucking tremendous question. Man, I feel like if we're talking, I'm gonna start the other way though. I'm gonna let you guys think. I'm gonna start the other way. If the question was a Klingon ship, the answer would be Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is at least a quarter Klingon. Like, I don't have his genealogy records in front of me. I don't want to make claims I can't back up. So I will speculate, and I will completely cop to the speculation that he's at least a quarter to a half Klingon. And you know, war is everything to him. Honor be damned. It's really just about winning, and it's really just about having that victory in battle. So, Starfleet question I completely dodged, but let me just say that if the question was who would be the Klingon commander, definitely Bill Belichick. Does anybody else? Yes, Elliot, go for it.
I got two answers.
Oh, shit, go for it.
I got two, too.
Yeah. Whoa, look at this.
Right here.
Nice.
I like this.
There you go.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Okay, let's think of a coach and think of a player.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, I like that.
There you go.
I like that. All right, Elliot, go for it.
From a coach, when you want... He's a crazy captain. You don't really think he knows what the fuck he's doing most of the time.
Oh, God.
But somehow he pulls it out. Brian, I'm going to let you guess.
Chip Kelly?
No.
Oh, okay.
Les Miles.
Oh, of course. Of course.
He really does. He should win.
We didn't say
win.
Good Starfleet captain.
Yeah. He's not good.
I'm taking one of your beers for that.
Yeah, yeah. He shouldn't win, but, like, he pisses you off when he wins. Like, a few years ago, I think it was 5 years ago when... They did this play where the ball had to go completely parallel to the kicker to be fine. And it just went that way. Then the roles just goes away. And my other captain, my serious captain, the guy who would be a good captain, really know what he was doing, would be Kevin Durant. He would be great at it. He could assign responsibility. Okay. And he'd be really forthright.
All right.
There is a line, Elliot, to your point about Les Miles. There's a line in Star Trek Into Darkness where he says... What's worse is you're using blind luck to justify your playing God.
Yes.
So what you're saying is Les Miles is the Chris Pine Captain Kirk.
Oh, he's the most Kirkiest Kirk we've ever Kirked.
Fair enough. Logan, you have some answers.
So the first one, which is one that's I think would be interesting, Pete Carroll.
I thought about Pete Carroll.
If you want to cheat at the Kobayashi Maru?
Yeah. he's cocky enough. He has the talent.
He's very positive.
Yeah, he's a positive dude. He knows how to get motivation out of people. But I think the one, if we're talking about Star Trek, the TV show, what I want to watch, Steve Spurrier.
Yes.
Okay.
Steve Spurrier. You know that dude would be drinking Coors and doing topless or like shirtless push-ups on the bridge of the
fucking holodeck, just doing push-ups.
Yeah, man,
he'd just be, like the battle would be over. He just starts running at the score.
He would just be in the holodeck playing golf the entire time.
See, that's what I love about this scenario is in your imagination at the holodeck, which could simulate any scenario possible. He's just doing push-ups outside. He has generated an outdoor scene just to do push-ups. I love it. And not only that, but like Spurrier and the whole idea of Pete Carroll specifically is that he knows how to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Yes.
Which is exactly where Kirk was really good at, is, oh shit, I came to this planet, I started some shit, way past my directive, but I'm gonna get the fuck out of Dodge before things really get hard. And that's exactly what Pete Carroll does, is, oh, what's happening here? Oh, I'm going to Seattle. So goodbye, and you deal with that.
Exactly.
No, I like that. I like that. Anybody else got anything?
I'd say Steve Kerr. If the Starfleet was like going along pretty well for a while, and not necessarily one of the best ones, but then, you know, he all of a sudden, Steve Kerr comes along and is like, you know, the Starfleet's pretty good, but I can make it the best one ever.
You mean it's the Star Trek where the random white guy just gets placed in after the black guy that set everything up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's a Todd Willingham situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You took us this far, and we're just going to bring in this white guy, and we're going to be one of the best Starfleets ever.
And he doesn't have to wear alien makeup.
Ah, man. You know, thinking of a player outside of football, because I'm trying to vary it up a little bit. I don't want to stick strictly just to football, because the coach that I would pick if I was going to pick a coach would probably be Bruce Arians. I could see Bruce. I mean, just give him the reins of something, and it doesn't matter who you've got in any given position, he's going to find some way to win. Mm. You know, he may not get you a Super Bowl with the, you know, with the underlings, or without having, you know, somebody like Carson Palmer and, you know, driving the actual ship, but he will rally everybody around, and he will make you feel like you've got a shot, kind of thing, you know? So I'd go with Arians, and then, oh, man, player-wise, damn, this is fucking difficult.
Let me throw my player while you're thinking, and not to be a complete homer here, but the Jean-Luc Picard of the NFL has been and will always be Peyton Manning. Because
I would have picked Manning if I hadn't picked a football coach for, you know.
Well, let me alleviate you of that burden, because Peyton Manning is the thinking commander. He is the professor of football. He may not be impressive physically. He may not get into a lot of hand-to-hand situations. Have you ever seen Peyton Manning run?
He can still kick some ass.
He can still kick some ass. But have you ever seen Peyton Manning run? It's an embarrassing. It looks like a drunk baby giraffe. Physicality-wise, he doesn't have the same rough-and-tumble style as Captain Kirk.
Have you seen him dance to Rocky Top?
Yes, that's also a very tragic thing. That's as tragic as Vulcan exploding. But he's the kind of guy who will be able to completely outthink his opponent, the guy who can use diplomacy, the guy who can use academics as an actual solution to a physical problem. He is the Jean-Luc Picard of the NFL. So I'm going with Peyton Manning.
Peyton and Brady at Tanagra.
Kerbla! I like it. Adam, did you think of a player while I rambled about
You know what? Peyton the Manning? The one player that I think would be really just, I guess, in a different sport would be
Johnny Manziel.
I'd go with
oh God.
He'd be the guy who thinks he could wait, pilot the Starfleet.
I want to get on Vince Young's ship is like all I'm saying.
Is club hopping a sport? Because if so, then he's already transitioned to a new sport.
You know what? I'd like to see what Mike Trout could do behind, you know, with a Starfleet command. You know,
interesting.
Mike, he's young and he's energetic about his sport. You know, like, I feel like there's very few guys who feel really, really excited going out there and playing baseball. When you watch Mike Trout play, Mike Trout looks legitimately excited to go out there and play baseball.
He's also like very humble. Like I've heard him in interviews. He's got a mix of like cocky confidence, but like being really humble about it. He'll talk about the way he'll see an approaching pitch, and he's like, "Well, I saw the pitch coming, and I knew I could hit it like 300 some odd feet." But just like saying like really calmly and just like
So let's go with that. I'm gonna go with Mike Trout only because I can't think of anybody else that in any other sport, and I wanted to use somebody from baseball.
That's quite a catch.
Good answer.
I like it, Ramon. You got something?
Yeah, I mean, I want a captain that will not blink and will just kind of push the button. And I think Marshawn Lynch is kind of the ship that you want to be on. You want someone that's a little bit unhinged, a little bit stoned, but mellow, protective, a big brother figure to the community.
And just plow right through the middle of the board.
Who's just going to...
And he'd have given himself the ball.
You beat me to the joke. Fuck you, JC.
So
I was like, let me wait for Ramon to step talk.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I'm glad somebody
You know what? Actually, if I wasn't to pick somebody from the Starfleet, I would definitely want to pick somebody who would not want to talk to the press.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Absolutely.
I'm here so I don't get stunned by the phaser.
Yeah.
He will never get stitches.
He will never. I like it. Good answers all around, guys. Interesting question from Kevin Moreno. Who do you think would be better, would do a better job at being the head of FIFA? Lord Zedd, Dr. Doom, Darth Vader, or A Rock? Not The Rock, just A Rock.
I know.
Yes.
Dr. Doom, because even though he's a villain, in the Marvel comics, he literally is the god of their universe right now through their reorientation of their universe. Like, he saved it from Calamity.
Interesting.
And now he runs it.
Well, no, that's interesting because
he also was the ruler of an Eastern European country, it's pretty much soccer religion.
Reorientation of the universe is kind of what's happening right now with FIFA.
So you would say he's the president of everybody?
Yeah.
I am the president of everybody.
You know what? I'm gonna go with Zedd only because I'm actually picturing Zedd from Police Academy. I think Bobcat Goldthwait would make an awesome would make an amazing.
You guys, what we're gonna do this week? Oh God,
that was terrible, by the way. Only because nobody can do Bobcat Goldthwait.
I don't even think he can do it.
He can't do it anymore. Actually, you know what? The funniest thing I've ever heard in my life, and I really wish I could find a dub. You know what? Sometimes, whenever somebody goes to Mexico, please find a copy of Police Academy on DVD, only because I want to see how they dub it. Because the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life was, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I was watching Univision, and they were doing a dubbed version of Police Academy 3, and there was nothing more hilarious than trying to hear a Mexican try and capture Bobcat Goldthwait.
That's fantastic, man.
That I would pay untold sums of pesos. So like $12 to see that, because that sounds
y'all know
amazing.
YouTube exists, right?
No, what is that?
I think I just found it.
You found YouTube.
Please play it.
Elliot found YouTube, everybody.
Yeah, you can just find like an. I'm not gonna play it right now, but you can find like an audio clip.
That's good to know. Logan, what do you think? Who would you pick out of that lot? Again, it was Lord Zedd, Dr. Doom, Darth Vader, or A Rock.
Oh, man, you got my hopes up when you said The Rock.
He is a baller.
Honestly, at this point, everything kind of runs itself. So you know A Rock's going to do a better job than what's been going on the past few years.
I would agree with
you
that.
You make a good point, because it's like, if it does sort of run itself, just don't be corrupt.
Yeah.
Just sit up at the top. Just don't do anything. Just sit there.
But, again, also, like, if someone is like, here's 40 grand cash, all you have to do is check, like, Qatar and not Portugal on this form. We would be like, yeah, all right, fuck Portugal. So it's completely understandable.
I mean, human nature is human nature.
Human nature is human nature. It is what it is. You know, at the end of the day, people get to play their soccer. No, I'm kidding. FIFA's horrible. It's the worst. But to answer your question, let's go Darth Vader. He'd do a fine job.
I'm going to have to go with Lord Zedd, because if you remember in that, I believe it was second season of Power Rangers when he came in. Yeah, I said it.
It was second season.
Yes, it was. He had to take over for Rita Repulsa, so he already has on his resume the experience of taking over for a total fuck-up. So I'm going to go with Lord Zedd only because experience is everything, and he's already had the experience of taking over for someone who... I'm sorry. I'm going to stop you. If you know that the regular size monster does no damage to the Power Rangers, and at the end of every episode you make it grow, why don't you just send it in fully formed from the first act and maybe destroy a little bit more of Angel Grove, Japan, Angel Grove, California, before they have a chance to combine their swords? And to wit, what is the point of the individual Zords if the only time they do any damage whatsoever to the monster is when they form the Megazord? Why even bother to release the individual Zords?
You have the Ultron problem going on.
Yes, it's the Ultron problem.
You know, I feel like it's kind of like the Pete Sampras strategy kind of thing. Like you have it's like you have a serve that's strong enough to just like win you the match. But you don't want to be so boring to just send it in like right away. Like,
So
it's like you've got more game to just serve.
Is it Rita toying with the Power Rangers, or the Power Rangers toying with Rita?
Well, it's her thinking that she has a good enough backup plan that she can fuck them up later, and then she's just consistently wrong.
And to be fair to Rita, like,
basically she's not Pete Sampras when she thinks she's Pete Sampras.
Yeah. But to be fair to Rita, like, she's the only Power Rangers villain of the first 5 years that actually did any damage to the Power Rangers by recruiting the Green Ranger and brainwashing him.
Yeah.
That was the only time the Power Rangers were any really real mortal danger.
Credit where credit is due, Elliot. I absolutely agree with you. With Green with Envy series.
I'm glad that you remember this. Bring back like fantastic memories.
I may or may not have gone back and watched the Power Rangers seasons on Netflix.
There's a fan of ours, a very very wonderful gentleman named Ryan Brace from Canada.
Beta Ray
Brace, who sent me on my birthday a Power Morpher. Yes. Like an OG Power Morpher, and I was just like, wow.
I'm going to say Power Rangers the movie, kind of a guilty pleasure of mine.
I kind of like that movie.
Really? Me too.
I do kind of like that movie.
We should eat pizza and talk about it.
We should eat pizza and talk about it sometime when we're not on this show.
I think it turns 20 this year, doesn't it?
I think it does.
Oh my god, which means I turn 100.
I think that's an event.
Are we going to have to do a commentary? It sounds like we're going to have to do a commentary.
I bet it's going to be better than Teen Wolf.
Hey, well, you know. So,
also, confession time, you guys were talking about Lord Zedd the entire time. I was thinking Lord Zod. So I'm really glad I didn't answer that.
Terrence Stamp, also a scary motherfucker.
He was a general.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
General. That's, yeah.
A great question from at Limonji, I believe is how you pronounce this name. If athletes are forced to choose other sports for a season, so if you have an athlete playing in one sport who has to choose another sport for a season, who dominates elsewhere? Their answer is J.J. Watt in tennis. I'm not sure I buy that.
At least we know it's not Michael Jordan in baseball.
It's not Michael.
Oh, wow. I mean, I think the answer there is pretty easy. You just take a really big, really strong NBA player and you have him play tight end.
That's, yeah.
I think
that's because that's been proven to work.
It's been proven to work. It's the quickest path up the tree.
Sure,
it's
you want the easy answer.
That's the answer.
Yeah, LeBron was highly recruited when he was in high school to be a receiver for Ohio State. People thought he could play in the NFL.
If I may, Hope Solo MMA.
Yeah.
Just from personal experience, yeah. I think she might be pretty
personal
good.
Personal experience.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
What have you done?
I was going to say Brittany Griner for the same reason.
I would say Ronda Rousey to be a boxer. So just so she can knock out Fortnite.
That's I don't know.
That's a lateral move. Yeah, I feel like that's a lateral.
It's a different sport.
But I will say, Ronda Rousey fighting men in MMA should be a thing. That I've said it before. I will say it again. Yeah. She should be able to fight the dudes in MMA because she will kick ass.
If she signs on, yeah. I mean, she wants to, why not?
True story.
You know what? Interestingly enough, actually, it's somewhat related. I saw that Herschel Walker is actually still, to some degree, considering coming back to playing in the NFL.
What? Herschel Walker?
Yeah.
On a Walker?
53-year-old. He was on, I can't remember exactly which sportcast he was on, but 53-year-old Herschel Walker.
Jesus Christ.
And keep in mind,
Herschel Walker. Which in football years? 97.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I will say this. He actually has a legitimately good reason, or a legitimate reason for thinking that he could do it.
He's broke.
You know, strange enough, he doesn't spend any of his money on food. He doesn't eat anything. It's weird. But he was like, you know what? Because he was timed in a 40. Like the last time he said he ran, it was like a couple years ago. And this is when he was doing his MMA training because he fights in the MMA. Like he does mixed martial arts fighting, and he's, I don't know, 3-0 or something like that. At 53 years old, something like. Not like he's fighting great guys or anything, but anyway, he ran a 40 and he was clocked in. Roughly like around 4.3, 4.4. Still, like at 53 years old.
Wow.
But he said the reason why he would consider going back to the NFL on something that's not like completely jumped off his radar yet is because the way the game has changed and how they treat running backs, it's a by committee kind of league.
Yeah.
So it's not like you don't have workhorses anymore. Do you like the Adrian Petersons and the Marshawn Lynches are very, very rare. Mostly what you have is a team with, you know, 2 to 3 running backs that they rotate on, you know, on any given play. So when you're 53 years old and the game is kind of around you like that and you're not expected to go in there and produce like 20 to 30 carries per game, you can probably do it to some degree.
You make a good argument, but here's the problem.
Sure, but is he really considering that as an option?
I don't know how legitimate he is with it.
He said he could play.
He said he could play. Like he thinks he could still play. And he's considering, you know what, they still have, what is it, I know it bombed, like, horribly.
The veteran combine?
Yeah. I would love to see Herschel Walker, like, somebody
Speaking
of that age.
Speaking of Vince Young.
See him outperform Michael Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that LeBron commercial where old guy. He's like, yo, Young Bucks don't know nothing.
I would pay to see that versus the draft.
Yeah.
So I have to, before I give my answer, I have a clarifying question. My answer would be Manute Bol, but first, I have to, well, I know. Well, that's the thing. I need to clarify. Is being Slenderman a sport? If he was actually to transition to be the internet-created myth of Slenderman, would that be considered a sport? Because I think he would have been great at that.
If the sport is pissing my pants, then yes.
if lion taming or slash hunting was a sport, he claimed that when he was a teenager, he killed a lion with his bare hands.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Stuffies. Also, John Cena should play football. John Cena on the other side of the line from J.J. Watt would be kind of terrifying.
Well, nobody could see him.
Nobody could see him, exactly. Thank you, Elliot.
Not so much.
He would be a great slot wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah.
not so much one athlete from one sport to another sport, but the Mountain from Game of Thrones has tried out for the Colts.
Jesus Christ, really?
But, and we said no?
Well, no, he has knee issues. Like,
I don't care if he has both of his eyes gouged out like he did to fucking... What's his name? Terrell. I don't care. I don't care. Fucking hire the Mountain. Colts, Ursay, listen to me. Hire the Mountain. I don't care if both of his knees shatter in the middle of a game. Did you not see that episode? He was dead. It was over. And he still won that duel. Fucking Ursay. God damn it. We were this close to greatness. Next question.
Actually, no, hold on. Yeah. The person who I would have liked to see play a different sport, only because of how great I heard he was actually in the sport and how highly recruited he was, I would have liked to have seen Joe Mauer play football.
Huh.
Because Joe Mauer was the highest rated quarterback the year. Like, he was an All-American quarterback and All-American baseball player coming out of high school. He chose baseball. But okay. He was actually, I want to say Bobby Bowden was the one who recruited him to Florida State. And he said that if the baseball thing doesn't work out, I will put you in at any given moment that you choose to come back and play for Florida State.
You know, you saying that, it reminded me of Bo Jackson, which reminded me of one of my favorite cartoons when I was little.
All Stars.
Yes. I think Pro Stars.
Pro Stars. Pro Stars.
So I just little side.
Respect the sidebar.
If anybody knows of, I'm gonna go to JC. Who, if you had to cast three stars for your new cast of Pro Stars, who would it be?
Oh, today? Man.
Yeah.
Elliot says, fuck you, fan questions. I got one of my own.
Yeah. I'm a fan, too. Fuck you.
You've got to replace Bo Jackson.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
LeBron James.
And LeBron James is dick.
LeBron James. Let's say Bryce Harper. And J.J. Watt.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's a solid trio. I think that's solid. Got a question here. We'll do one more question. I really like this one because it kind of speaks to our show a little bit. Is it better or worse for a sports analyst to have actually played the sport they are reporting on?
Ooh.
Because I'm going to tell you right now, I have played very few of the sports that I report on. I also have no idea what I'm talking about most of the time. I will freely admit that. So, in general, do you guys think it is better or worse for a sports analyst to have actually played the sport they are reporting on?
I think it depends on, it's a case by case because if the person who's going to commentate on the sport is actually articulate and is able to, you know, get their viewpoint out and have it make sense, they can commentate at a higher level than you can ever commentate if you've never experienced it.
Yeah, what you're looking for is an articulate player.
Yeah.
Like an articulate former player.
A very well-spoken class act.
Herb Street is a perfect example of that, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, like the dude is freaking golden. He's a former quarterback for Ohio State. He's an amazing commentator, amazing analyst.
I forget that he's a former player.
Yeah, he's just so good at it, and he knows the game inside and out, and he's better as a commentator than he even was as a player, and he was a pretty decent player.
Yeah, well, and actually I think Logan hit it on the head. I think what's really great in those situations is a player that was never particularly good. A player that was kind of a fly on the wall during the big locker room speech as opposed to the guy that was...
He's a gym rat.
I wouldn't even say the gym rat. You just
buy a cracker.
You want someone who's
lunch pail.
Who can kind of build an identity around their personality and their voice. But has that real world experience?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person because like Reggie Miller has been doing it for 4 years and he's still pretty terrible at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Webber has only been doing it about a year and he's pretty good.
Like, Kenny Smith is good.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, you avoid when you aren't a former player, I will say the one thing I think you avoid is the deep-seated bias. Mm-hmm. Like, I have seen commentators make ridiculous prognostications that are clearly based on nothing more than their dislike of a team they used to play against.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, if you can't distance yourself from a game you don't even play anymore, then maybe you shouldn't be doing
it. And you do see a little bit of that, to use the NBA as an example. You see a lot of that with
Sean Elliott, the guys
from the 90s, in that jump shooting teams will never amount to anything because they can't hit jumpers in the playoffs. So, well, clearly
Phil Jackson said that.
Yeah, Phil Jackson, Barkley, Weber, a lot of the 90s guys said that the way you win at basketball is the way you did it in the 90s. That's clearly not the case, but a lot of them won't back off of that stance. So, mm-hmm. It just kind of depends.
Well, Weber still thinks there are like 17 timeouts in a game, so.
Well, you have Magic Johnson. I heard him on the radio the other day saying that there's no way that Steph Curry's Warriors would have won a game on them because they were just too big a presence down low. And I'm like, okay, Grandpa, yeah, like when you were playing, the only thing that mattered was your, you know, in the paint presence and being physical.
Yeah.
What you don't seem to understand is that when people aren't the size of you, Magic, they are more maneuverable, they are quicker, and they can get to those corners where you just absolutely cannot stop them. Yeah. And three is always going to be a bigger number than two, so by the law of averages, eventually, you would lose a game.
Yeah, Magic has proven that he's somebody. If he were still on ESPN, he'd be terrible.
He had a horrible talk show.
He claims he left because he didn't get along with Bill Simmons, but I mean, I think they would have gotten rid of him anyway because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He didn't get along with the truth. Boom. I said it. You can write it down. All right. Well, thank you guys for your questions. Appreciate that. We will do more Cheers from the Cheap Seats going forward. But let's go ahead and wrap up the show with a discussion about endings. Oh, so sad. Everything good must come to an end. And I think on this segment we'd like to talk about our favorite endings, be they from movies, be they the endings of certain playoff runs, be they the endings of TV shows, video games, what have you. I'm just interested to know, guys, what are your favorite endings? And if one of you is going to talk about an ending that the other person has not seen, feel free, that person, to run screaming from the room. but yeah, just throw it out there, guys.
I got my favorite ending from my favorite movie. Feel free to laugh, because it is absurd.
Is it, let me guess, what? Is it Pacific Rim?
No.
Then I have nothing.
Armageddon.
Of course.
Everybody's got to die, but you might as well die saving the entire world. It's like, we win, Gracie. We win.
Can I say one thing about Armageddon?
What?
I actually was very fortunate last week. My girlfriend took me to see Neil deGrasse Tyson speak here in Austin, and I thought he was going to rip that movie apart. When he mentioned the movie, I was like, oh my God, here we go. He's going to rip it apart. The one thing he hit upon is the one thing I had never noticed before in the movie. I always complain about the fact that the asteroid, which is, by the way, a rock,
yeah,
it is just a space rock, is growling and trying to actively throw them off.
That's because they know you're here to kill
them. No, it doesn't, because it's a fucking rock.
It's a goddamn Greek tragedy.
But it's a space rock.
Wait, hold on. Is it the FIFA rock, though?
No, it's not the FIFA rock. And secondly, the thing that my brother pointed out to me that really bugged me is, wouldn't it have just been easier to train astronauts to drill than to train drill technicians to be astronauts?
I'll tell you, like Bruce Willis, I've been drilling all my life. Those boys, like, I'm sure they make great astronauts, but they don't know a damn thing about drilling.
Yeah, and you could but my point is, you could teach an astronaut to use a fucking jackhammer quicker than you could teach a technician on an oil rig.
That point was reportedly made by Ben Affleck during filming, and Michael Bay was like, yeah, shut up.
Okay.
that is a true story.
In the movie, like, Bruce Willis goes to NASA, and they're using his drill bit. They did a piss poor job of putting together, exact quote, and he's like, you're tearing up rotors and you don't know why. He's like, okay. Yeah, because you did a piss poor job. The engine assembly is all wrong. It's all backwards. Who did this, Mr. Wizard?
See, crew needed like a dog. Like, I thought there was going to be like a mutt.
Well, that was Owen Wilson. Yeah. He's basically a golden retriever.
Well, you can't argue with it. It worked. They saved Earth.
Yes.
Okay? You can't argue with the fact that it may have been
smarter. I'm going to argue with it. This is me arguing with it right now.
We're alive.
But that's
And it was better.
First of all, you're treating this like it's a documentary, which I appreciate on a weird level.
Wait, hold on. It's not?
It's not a documentary. But Elliot, to your point, yes, he says that you did a piss poor job, which is correct. So why is the next line out of his mouth not, I'm going to show you how to do it right, as opposed to train us for 3 weeks on how to go into space?
Because he's egotistical. He's like, well, if anybody's going to save the world, anybody wants to know this equipment,
because
I designed it.
He's
the
mouthpiece for Michael Bay. But the one thing that Dr. Tyson hit upon that I'd never thought about is that the asteroid that hits the World Trade Center comes in completely horizontally.
Oh, you're right.
Where in the fuck from space is an asteroid coming in horizontally? It's actually a little bit more terrifying now that we live in a post-9/11 universe to think about an asteroid that was apparently fired from New Jersey at the World Trade Center.
Mm. So you're saying the asteroids are Al-Qaeda?
I am saying that the asteroids are terrorists and need to be watched at all points. At all points. So Elliot likes the ending of Armageddon. He's a big Aerosmith fan. I get that. He loves animal crackers.
Just push play.
Does anyone else have a non-Michael Bay entry into this discussion?
No.
I was gonna say Bad Boys, but,
yeah
you gotta learn the words, man. You gotta learn the words.
My actual favorite ending, and I don't want to be pretentious to think about it, but I was really satisfied and like taken aback by the Mad Men ending.
Yeah,
I think they landed.
Okay,
I'm not gonna, it was
beautiful.
I felt like they really stuck it. It's really hard to end stuff, you know. I mean, think about the third Batman movie and all the like bullshit that was in that. You had like Kynes Ward and stuff. Like, it's really hard to end a movie, man.
What's wrong with that movie? Yeah.
Is that your biggest problem? Kynes Ward.
It's hard to end stuff, man.
Having real athletes in your movie is your
highlight. And then the problem with that movie is like there's so much good there.
There's a lot of good stuff,
yeah. But there's so much crap too.
Because it's hard to be the Joker and just like chaos at the end. It's hard to be like, well, we're going to tie it all together, and this is satisfying.
Can you write a book called It's Easy to Be the Joker? Because that sounds like such an amazing... Like, if Steve Miller, from the Steve Miller Band, ever writes an autobiography, It's Easy to Be the Joker would be the title of that autobiography.
You gotta be the Joker to get to heaven.
Yeah.
And how about the UFO attack at the end of Mad Men?
Shut the fuck up, JC, because I will believe you, and you know that.
And I'm not going to... These aren't spoilers, but the thing about the Mad Men ending that's so great is it stays true to its theme. It doesn't sell out. Drinking. It doesn't... It stays true to who Don really is, and right. I love that.
Fair enough. What do you guys think?
Not my favorite. It's just the only one I could think of because a show that I really like. It was kind of cheesy, but I really dug the show Smallville.
Yes,
because I like the character of Superman.
My God, we're talking about Smallville. Somebody save me.
You're basically spent 10 years waiting for Superman to show up, and he finally does at the very end for about a minute and a half.
See, and I feel like JC, that is a metaphor for the decline of the male libido in this country, because women spend their entire lives waiting for Superman. Boil it down even further. They spend all night waiting, hoping for Superman, and when that moment finally comes, they get Superman for about 30, 45 seconds.
Yeah, but that 90 seconds was awesome.
Just put the whiskey down, Jesus.
Hey, no. Damn it. I will say, I was just thinking about this, the ending of one of my favorite, and I think Adam will probably agree with me on this. There is a film that I can think of. There are plenty of films that have perfect endings, but the film that's ending is so perfect that I burst into tears every time I watch it. Charlie Chaplin's City Lights.
Yep.
The ending of that movie, like, it compounded by the fact that there is no dialogue.
Yep.
Compounded by the fact that they have to communicate so much. It's not even one of those moments where the last line is put on the screen. There is no last line. It is a last gesture, a last look, and a last impression.
Yeah.
That beautifully sums up everything that happens in that movie and the relationship that those two people have, and is one of the sweetest moments in cinema without being treacly, and I adore it. Every time I see it, I burst into tears. Yep. City Lights is one of my favorite movies, and that ending is perfect.
It is. It is the most perfect cinematic ending ever.
Would you say better than Congo?
Ramon, bad.
Question.
Ramon, bad.
I have a serious one.
Tickle me.
you say that one's better. I haven't seen City Lights. I need to see it. But you can't tell me this is a real answer here. The best ending like of all cinema to me has to be at the end of Shawshank Redemption, where Red gets on the bus and he gets down to Mexico. He goes to I want to see my friend and the blue waters of San Juan Anejo.
Well, turns out I forgot the name of the goddamn town, so I ended up in Acapulco. Met up with Elvis.
You know
it was
what?
A good vacation.
That was really fun.
Yes, I'm gonna, you know what? I'm going to say City Lights. I'm going to say City Lights is still better than that.
Really? Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree 100%.
I mean, not downplaying. I mean, City Lights is the pinnacle, I think,
agree
of
endings. Disagree?
It is like, it is the pinnacle of endings. It is the only context that you need to know about City Lights is that the woman in the, is that the woman prior to the ending was blind, and mm-hmm. now she's not. And the reason why she is not is because of Chaplin, and she doesn't know that.
She has never, he has been her benefactor the entire movie, never made himself known. And there's a moment at the end of the film where a simple gesture makes her realize that the person she's talking to is the person who has been her benefactor even when she was blind. And they exchange a look. Yep. And that's all it is. It's just a look.
And she realizes that the whatever preconception she had of him before that completely changes.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's almost like you take, you it's like not judging a book by its cover kind of thing. Yeah. You know, it's based, that's, not judging a book by its cover, it can almost be attributed specifically to, like, City Lights.
Okay, well, look, y'all got me sold. So, I'm going to have to go see City Lights. But I want to ask you a question.
I think we both own it, so you can just borrow it.
Would you... this is something that really stuck in my craw the other day, back in the day. Would you put Shawshank Redemption above Forrest Gump at this point?
Yes. As far as endings go?
Is Forrest Gump considered a good movie?
Oh, as far as movies?
It won the Oscar that year.
I mean, like... It's
sort of crash.
People watch it on TBS and people have like nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a good movie. I think it's just a very iconic, nice movie.
It's sort of a mean movie because like this guy is in Forrest love Gump? With this girl for his entire life,
and she won't sleep with him until she has the most incurable disease on the planet. If you hear a slithering sound, that's the can of worms that could be opened I completely understand your question.
Slytherin.
Because if we're going to talk about the Oscars and their actual function as a barometer for the best film of the year, I have some quibbles.
You know what?
I have some quibbles.
Let's put it this way. Shawshank is easily the better movie between the two. Forrest Gump, I think, actually has the better moment.
What's the moment?
The moment is when Forrest Gump realizes that he has a son.
And his son's smart.
And his son's smart.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's actually the better moment. There's no moment in Shawshank that I think tops that moment.
What about Red Skull hearing?
Even so, like, there's very few things, I think, in cinema that actually top that moment played by Tom Hanks, because I think he plays that absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, there's no better way to play that moment than to realize that you're subpar mm-hmm. as far as intelligence goes, and the biggest fear in your life at that moment, within a matter of seconds, is knowing that you had an offspring, and that offspring could be as dumb as you are. And you don't want something to go through that all of its life. And then hearing seeing the alleviation when she tells him that, you know, no, he's actually one of the smartest kids in his class, that...
It is a beautiful moment.
Like, it's the entire weight of the world is lifted off of... Like, the entire weight of the world is put on him in a matter of seconds and then alleviated in a matter of seconds.
It's an even more beautiful moment when you realize that the first movie that was supposed to be Robert Zemeckis' feature film debut was Bordello of Blood.
Really?
That's a true story. He and Bob Gale wrote Bordello of Blood in 1972. That's a truth fact.
Well, I want to say thank you for a huge part of my puberty.
You know what? Actually, does Robert Zemeckis actually direct one of the first episodes, Tales from the Crypt?
He may have.
I know he did. I can't remember exactly which one. You know what? I think it's the Humphrey Bogart episode that he did.
Oh, fair enough.
Anyway.
Yes, Logan. Did you have an answer for this kind of hypothetical query we put forward?
You know, like, the kind of first thing, whenever you bring up endings to me, the first thing that pops into my mind is the ending to one of my favorite video games as a child, Metroid.
Yes!
Perfect!
Yeah. Hold on. I know what you're talking about. I know what Metroid is. I played Metroid briefly, but...
Stop bragging.
Please tell us that ending, because...
At this point, it's not a spoiler.
You've had 30...
You're playing through this, at the time, massive game, this whole adventure where you're trying to basically save the planet, figure out the mystery of this world that you're on. Go through this big, long thing, go through hell and back, and then at the very, very end, you take off your mask... And Samus, the hero of the game, is a lady. And the entire time you're playing as this badass lady, this badass woman. And to me at the time, whenever I first beat that, whenever I was 6, 7, whatever age I was, it kind of was eye-opening to me. Yeah. Like realizing that that women can be heroes too. You know, I kind of always knew that too, but it was very eye-opening at the time.
Yeah.
And I loved that. You know, I grew up in a family predominantly of women. I have two older sisters, you know, I look up to very much. But then that was definitely one moment when I was like, hell, these could be my friggin' sisters, you know.
Mm-hmm. Something that challenged, like, you know, gender stereotypes, especially back in the 80s. It was very much like genuistic, like Rambo.
Yeah, yeah. Like no,
Muscle Man.
And I remember it striking me even then. It was one of the first kind of moments that I was just really, like, taken aback and, like, really impressed. I remember kind of, as a young child, having a somewhat mature thought, thinking, this is nice. Awesome.
And that's when art's at its best, when it makes you inform about your own life.
Yeah.
That's the value of art.
Kind
of
like Armageddon does for Elliot.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew you were going to have a real rant.
You joke, but here's the thing. This is the reason I like Armageddon so much. Because, like, I watched Armageddon when I was in 8th grade. And that was when I was just at the very beginning of starting to realize, you know, I'm going to die one day.
That's the first time you realize that one day you're going to
die. Yeah, no, it's like I was very sheltered. Like, I knew I was going to die, but it wasn't real. Like, it was a part of that emotional maturation where, like, you start really thinking about, like, oh, I mean, this is not going to go on forever.
Are we getting to me all and about mortality?
It just sort of says, like, you know, you want to do something good with your life.
I could stay awake just to hear this story.
Copyright.
I'm sorry, you're right. That was a parody song.
That was a great
parody.
I don't want to miss a thing. I think what a lot of people don't respect about Aerosmith is that they're kind of late 80s period onward. They had a lot of Nashville influence where they had these like high-end country balladeers kind of writing their songs like Crazy and stuff. And mm-hmm. It was completely, you know, it wasn't Toys in the Attic, but it was really beautiful, really cool stuff that's like held up really well. And I think I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, probably the pinnacle of that.
Yeah.
Great song that's held up beautifully. Yeah, Armageddon's a really interesting movie because you're right, like in the end of the 90s, all we were thinking about was the end of the world. Is the world going to end?
You're breaking
Brian. The Y2K.
Y2K was like, is Nostradamus right? Are we going to get hit with a big asteroid? Like, and to this day, like, every day of my life since the late 90s, I think, what if the world ends today? What if, like, what if we get hit by a giant asteroid? What if we become the, like, you know, there's something really finite. And I think it's really interesting because, like, now you have all these, like, I don't know, whole other can of worms. But the point is, you're right. I think that movie, like, really resonates as this, like, exercise in us thinking about our mortality and the finite nature of humanity and how we're all gonna die one day.
And you make a good point because, like, the bookend to that movie for me, the movie I always wanted to see after I saw Armageddon came out 2 years ago, and it's seeking a friend for the end of the world, where the world does end. There's an entire movie about how do you deal with knowing there's an end? What's really important? That's my favorite movie of the last few years for that bookend, and it sort of tracks my emotional maturation to accepting it, not just knowing you're going to die and try to like fight it off by being immortal through your actions, but just saying, look, you're going to die.
I mean, I think that's why I like This Is the End, is because it reminds me of what I would do. Awesome. At the end of the world, which is eat bacon, jerk off, and eat bacon.
You gotta get the last jerk off in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? Speaking of last jerk offs, I can't believe this is the actual segue into this.
Is Chris here?
No. So there is a reason that we are talking about endings and finality.
I got a bad feeling about this.
So, as you guys know, this Inside the Locker is one of the first shows that we started this website with 2 years ago, oneofus.net. Inside the Locker was something that I had been... a sports show was something I always wanted to do. I was always one of those weird kids who was a total geek, totally love all of the nerdy stuff, but it was also a big sports fan, which in my circles was kind of hard to find. And, you know, meeting Elliot, being friends with Adam and JC, and later meeting Ramon, like, I just started to kind of realize that there were other people out there who, you know, had that same passion, and that's why we decided to start the show. I didn't think it would be this difficult, but it is so hard. This is effectively my last broadcast as host of Inside the Locker. This has been an absolutely phenomenal experiment, and I have loved every second of it, and I am so proud that it is going to continue. I am so proud that we are leaving this in capable hands. Ramon is going to be taking over for me as host of Inside the Locker, and I can't even, like, I'm so excited for you guys, the listeners, because Ramon is does everything I do except knows sports, which is going to be a very unique change of pace, I think, for the show. And, you know, the Daily.Office, Logan, again, I have to thank you so much for letting us use the space. And this is going to be where the recordings happen from now on. And it's just, it's a beautiful area, and there's going to be so much opportunity, so much potential to open things up. But again, I am like overwhelmed with the support that we've gotten in the last 2 years, and for these guys sitting here and how much, you know, they have devoted their time and effort, and yeah, a little bit tougher than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, I just, there's a lot
of
things.
You're staying on one of us, right?
Like, oh yeah, no, I'm not leaving the site. It's just, you know, with the day job and with kind of focusing more on helping out our subscribers and making sure they're getting everything they need. It's just, it's time for me to take a step back from a few things. And unfortunately, this is one of those things that, you know, I put a lot of time into, and I love this show so much, but it's just reached that point where it's time for me to step down, and I am really thrilled. Ramon, thank you so much for stepping up and wanting to take over this week.
Well, this is an applause for Brian, first and foremost.
Thank you.
First and foremost. And
we're going to take it back.
Let's take it back.
Thanks, man. Picking that off, I really do hope to be the Carmen Electra to your Jenny McCarthy, you know, like swooping in.
Well, that's gonna get awkward.
Thank you for setting the bar high.
Swoop is just, you know, kind of swooping in here and really kind of like helping to
separate.
But anyway, I did want to say one really quick thing. One of the really important things about Austin, like, we all get cynical about the traffic and about people moving here, but the reality is that most people that live in Austin, Texas, come from Texas, and that's significant because it means that if you're a weird person, if you're gay, if you're uncomfortable, if you feel isolated, you can go to Austin, Texas, and you can be at home. And that's something that's really special, and that goes hand in hand with this creative class, with working on random projects, with kind of getting up at 5 a.m. and doing 2 to 3 edits or doing, you know, a couple of things and putting some things together before you have to log on at 8 o'clock to go to work, and then just kind of thinking about your passion projects during the day. We all come from that space. We all echo that sentiment, and that's, I think, a big part of what we're about, and I think we all are pretty excited about going on this journey together, and then doing some fun shit. So let's giddy up. Let's go do it.
Let's have a toast here.
It's gonna be a good time.
The new era of Inside the Locker.
Already out of all my drink.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited for you guys to listen in.
We're clanging empty bottles.
Yeah. Clanging empty bottles.
There was a little bit of whiskey in my glass.
Wasn't there like a really cool Nike commercial about, God, 7 years ago with the Second Coming? It was like a rap song.
Yes.
That was like bringing in like the new class that now has
returned. Yeah, the new class here. We got Ramon. I know Logan's going to be sitting in whenever possible. And that's, I think this team, that's why I'm sorry to leave just because I have so much fun with the show, but I'm not concerned at all, because I feel like I am really, like, between the three guys, you know, who have been with me from the start, and Ramon coming in and Logan coming in, I'm not concerned. Like,
well, look at this,
I'm
like,
leaving this in really good hands.
Well, it's not like you're not invited back.
I will be. I will definitely
be. You should be
back.
Proud. Like, you know, you and Chris started one of us out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally out of nothing.
It's literally nothing.
And you kept it going, and you built a thing that you can just leave, and
yeah,
you can come back whenever you want, but, like, you can leave and have it propagate. That's something to be proud of. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's some... What the most people can hope for in life is just to leave a mark, and you've left a mark.
I appreciate that.
Proud.
Thanks, Elliot. Yeah. Yeah, and
getting
it's...
Getting all, like, Morgan Freeman over here.
Getting all wistful. I feel like I would, you know, like, I was, the last thing I wanted in the whole world was to see the show go away, and the search for somebody to take over for me and kind of, you know, lead this ship and keep it going was arduous. It really was. I didn't know, you know, where to go, but I got to say, like, it ended up being right under my nose. Somebody who had helped us out for a long time. Again, our Game of Cups coverage. I'm so proud of the World Cup coverage you put together, and, you know, and Ramon, I wish you the best. I know you're gonna keep doing a great job, and I now get the luxury of being a fan and getting to listen in, and I'm really excited about that.
Here's how cool Ramon is. I hadn't seen Ramon for a year, and I was driving home from work, and I was in South Congress, and it was right around ACL. I saw Ramon just walking across the street to ACL, just just on his phone. I'm like, oh, it's Ramon. And I didn't honk because I was like, that'd be weird. But I was like, oh, this is Ramon's doing the coolest thing in town.
Elliot. Well, that's an amazing story.
Well, that was kind of like the way we bumped into each other at South By. It was like we hadn't seen each other in a while, but we were talking about football and sports, and yeah, it's just
You're in great hands, fans. I can't even. I'm like you. I'm so excited for you guys, and this has been a dream come true. I'm so glad that I got to pretend to be a sportscaster for a while. Like that's really something that ever since I was a kid watching Dan Patrick on SportsCenter, that's like the thing I always wanted.
Governor now.
I get to pretend to be a governor now. I should have political aspirations. I do not. But again, just guys, thank you to Ramon. Thank you again to Logan and the Daily Dot. Daily Dot is a website, by the way, you should be checking out if you haven't already. They are going to be our new hosts for this show, and I'm so excited. So if anybody else has any parting words before we end the episode, feel free to throw them out. I feel like I'm babbling into this microphone.
Gentlemen, just let's raise our bowls here and take a puff here for oneofus.net and the new era.
The green era.
The new era.
Here.
No, man. Chin chin.
You guys can follow us on Twitter at ITLcast. You can like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. You become a subscriber. That would be great if you did that. That's how we keep this show. That's how we keep this website afloat, is by the generous donations of you, our fans. You can follow us individually. I'm at BryGuySalisbury.
At @B.
At JCDeLeon1.
Become a subscriber. The
art's
been great. At
ITL Elliot. Ramon, Logan, do you guys want to share Daily Dot or your own personal Twitter accounts? Or
sure. I'm on Twitter at LoganWTF.
And I'm myspace.com/RamonRamirez.
Do you still know Tom?
Oh, he may. But I'm going to end the show the way, man, for the last time. Oh, this is tough. In the paraphrasing words of the great Rocket Raccoon, when it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us. Baby, don't you forget about me. Don't you forget about me. Will you stand above me? Look my way.